Welcome to the 5 Million Milestone Podcast, where our intention is to share hard-earned wisdom and some stories that come from our experience growing Prompto Marketing from a startup to a 5 million annual revenue company. But we are also going to bring a series of guests to the show who have succeeded in specific areas of business, which allow them to scale up in meaningful and significant ways. Our goal is to help you avoid the mistakes that 99% of companies looking to scale to $5 million and beyond make, so you can be among the top 1% of companies that get to achieve this milestone. So let me introduce ourselves. This is the first episode of this podcast, and some introductions are deserved. My name is Matteo, and my co-host who's here with me is Pierre, and we are the guys behind the marketing at Prompto, which is a full-service digital marketing agency where we specialize in WordPress website support, WordPress website development, and digital marketing. So Pierre, you want to introduce yourself?
Hey. Hey, everyone. Hey, Tim and Matteo. Excited to be here on the podcast. I've been at Prompto for just 10 years, just this month, literally. So it's been quite a journey. And a big part of this podcast is, you know, when I started at Prompto, we were about $2 million in revenue, and now we're in the $5 million range. And we saw some similarities in kind of, you know, our revenue growth and objectives with what our clients are trying to achieve. And, you know, we're a professional services firm, and so are they. And so we thought, you know, there was a lot of lessons that we had learned for good or for worse that we would want to share, but also build, you know, go beyond our story and bring our customers within the series and get them to share their stories. And one of the things we've learned along the way for sure is that, you know, it takes a lot of people on the inside, but also on the outside to really drive growth. And so I think this is kind of the story we want to tell and share and bring people in. And obviously, I also want to introduce and pass the baton to Tim, who's been at Prompto for even longer than I am.
Yeah, I get to one up you a little bit, Pierre. I've been working at Prompto for 14 years. My very first job at Prompto back in 2010 was writing homepage banner headlines. And I've worked my way from there all the way up to the managing director today, so overseeing the whole ship now. And along the way in those 14 years, I've experienced a range of roles from in the pit, dealing with day-to-day client issues and requests and tickets coming in, all the way up to people problems, acquiring other businesses, and really top-level management stuff that that comes with that as well. So I'm excited to be able to share some of that knowledge with everyone and see what we can do to help people learn and grow in the same way that we have.
Yeah, Tim, you were telling us you were the 13th employee at Prompto back in 2010. So, you know, that's a while back, and clearly things have changed a lot. And I think, you know, one of the things we're kind of interested in here was a sort of a little bit of a history, kind of setting the stage and where Prompto was when you first joined. So if you could tell us a little bit of, you know, sort of very briefly how things look like and kind of what were the early challenges that, you know, Prompto was facing as a much smaller company and very new company, actually, you know, with sort of a new brand that people didn't know as well.
Yeah, I can give a little history lesson on Prompto. So it was started by a father and son team, Derek and Corey Brown. Derek moved out to Thailand, I want to say something like 20 years ago while he was working for Microsoft, decided that the big corporate life wasn't for him anymore, and he wanted to start his own business. And he roped his son into helping him out with that. And his idea was that he saw a lot of the IT companies that he had been working with while at Microsoft just really fail to execute on basic digital marketing, having really outdated websites or not having a website at all at that point, not being able to send out a newsletter every month, not keeping their blog up to date, all those sorts of things. And his first step was to reach out to his contacts in the IT industry and just sort of say, hey, I took a look at your website. It looks pretty outdated. I think I could build a better website for you. And thankfully, a lot of them said yes. And that's how Prompto first got its start. I got roped into Pronto by Corey, who I went to college with. I was sort of looking for an adventure, and I thought moving out to Thailand would be cool, and I thought it would just be a one-year thing. And I've been here for 14 years now and love it in Thailand, love working for Pronto, so it's been a really great journey. To answer your question about the initial challenges that we faced, I would put there's sort of two different categories. One is technology, that going into this, Derek and Corey didn't know all that much about building websites, and we're sort of trying to figure out which platform or CMS to use. Had a few false starts with some platforms that are now defunct today, so thankfully we didn't go down those roads, and Corey did a great job of digging really deep into WordPress and realizing that that's a long-term sustainable platform to use for building and managing sites. And we went all in on WordPress from there. And today it's still our only platform that we work with and super flexible. So it's been a great decision and worked out really well that WordPress has grown over the 14 years and grown in their capabilities to match how we've grown as a business and the demands of the market as well. So there was a lot of difficulty at first in picking that out or deciding things like where should our sites be hosted? How are we going to manage DNS? All these technical things that we weren't really super familiar with at the time. And they took some experimentation and also had some failures as well. I remember early on, we had a lot of server issues. We were doing all our hosting through Rackspace. And as we got bigger, our Rackspace server couldn't handle the amount of sites that we were managing and the amount of traffic those sites were receiving. And there was maybe a 2-month period where we were having like weekly crashes of our server and all the sites going down, like the biggest disaster you could imagine for a website development and support company. So there were some really big challenges with technology along the way that took some trial and error in some cases to figure out. We weren't always so lucky to just, like with WordPress, we just chose the right one at the beginning and it turned out perfect. There were a lot of other cases where we chose things that didn't work out well and had to adjust and learn and change from those.
Yeah, that does sound scary. You know, you don't want to lose all your customers in one go and all the recurring revenue that you've been kind of accumulating. And so you said you kind of joined around then in 2010. And so obviously at that point, Pronto was not, you know, even $1 million in revenue a year, right? It was still a very small business. It was growing at a decent pace. And so, you know, Do you remember when kind of Pronto hit that first million and kind of what sort of really helped propel you into that that level?
Yeah, I don't know exactly when we started hitting our first, when we first hit a million in annual recurring revenue, but there were a couple key milestones and actually one in particular that sticks out. But a lot of our strategies revolved around referrals and partnerships to bring in new business. It worked out well that managed service providers, these IT companies that were our initial clients, have a pretty tight-knit community and talk a lot amongst each other. So there's a lot of word of mouth that came that mm-hmm. way. Eventually, once we started working with other industries outside of IT, that opened the floodgates for more referrals to come in, because for a lot of our IT companies, their clients would come to them and say, hey, I need help with my website. And from that end client's perspective, they're thinking, oh, this IT company is the most technical person I know. I don't know where to turn for my website, so I'm just going to go ask them. But these IT companies actually didn't know much about building and managing websites. So they would then refer that on to us. And it sort of built this natural referral network early on that really worked to push our growth pretty quickly. And there's one particular partnership that actually happened right after I joined. I joined in September 2010. And the next month, we struck a deal with a marketing company that works, sales and marketing consulting company that works within the IT industry. And they had, I think, something like 100 clients that they wanted us to build sites for and manage those sites. So in October, the month after I joined, it was all hands on deck. We were all working 7 days a week to build 100 sites in 1 month. Thankfully, they were all pretty straightforward sites and nothing too complex. especially back in 2010, there wasn't all that much complexity to do anyways. And so, yeah, everyone just put their heads down and grinded for a month, and we got about 100 sites live, and that really solidified where we felt like, oh, this is actually going to work. We're becoming known within this industry, and that word of mouth is starting to get rolling, and we can see, okay, our path to million and beyond is starting to line up.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. And in a lot of ways, we see this in other industries and other companies that sort of their first sort of way to $1 million in annual revenue comes a lot from pre-existing relationships or partnerships that they've been able to build up to that sort of first million milestone. And then probably other sort of growth factors come into play in order for the company to grow past 1 million. Actually, moving on to a slightly different topic, Tim, I'm curious about the evolution of Pronto's visions and mission, especially in the early days. We know that the culture shifted from being less structured in, as I said, in the early days to be more defined as the company grew. And when Pronto was just starting out with the first sort of 10 to 20 employees, everyone was probably in the same room and everybody was on the same page. Everybody knew what was going on. But as the company grew, you started to see challenges like probably underperforming employees and those who didn't really fit the culture. So can you maybe tell us how a different culture was in the early startup days compared to after hitting the 1 million in annual revenue?
Yeah, it was really interesting to be a part of that culture shift because, yeah, very early on when it's 5, 10, 15 people, to get the team together, all you have to do is stand up at your desk and look around and say, hey, everybody, I have something to say. And it's so easy, a lot easier to keep people aligned with what we're working towards, why we're doing what we're doing, all those things that are so important to culture. And for that, I would say maybe first 20 people, we didn't have a defined way of talking about things or defined values, or I think at that point we barely even had a structured like performance review process. We'd just sit down with Derek and he'd say, okay, you're doing pretty good and maybe do this a little bit differently. And that was kind of it. So once it got a bit bigger and we started to see some of those people problems creep in, like, yeah, underperformers or bad culture fits, or maybe not someone who's necessarily an underperformer, but just has gotten misaligned in some way and needs to be nudged back onto the right path. And that's when we realized, oh, we actually need to get more organized about writing our values and defining those and sharing them with the team. So our values actually came out of those problems. And one of the things we were thinking when writing the values was, how can these be used to help underperformers or bad fit or misaligned team members? It helps them understand why they're a bad fit or why they're misaligned and guide them back to the correct path. So that was, it's sort of, you think of these values as a very positive thing that comes out of your business, but it was actually starting to see some negativity creep in that made us say, oh, we got to go define this and help people understand all this stuff. And then from there, it as you get bigger, 20 and beyond and 50 and above, however big you go, the amount of communication it takes to keep people aligned and understanding all of this just grows and grows. And like I said, when it's easy when there's just a handful of desks in the room and you can just say, hey, everybody, here's what I'm doing and here's why we need to do it, or let's have a quick meeting together or something like that. When it comes to a bunch of people, we started talking about each of the values in our monthly team meeting. So every month we would say, we're going to talk about this particular value today and be someone that people can count on. And give an example of a team member who used that value recently and sort of show that they can be that person to be counted on. And I think repeating that over and over in every monthly meeting really ingrained it into something that was an established culture. And I think it's so important to establish those definitions early on. The longer you wait, the less control you have over the culture of your business. And thankfully, we didn't wait too long. Sort of as soon as we started seeing some problems, we worked towards defining it a bit better. But when you define that culture early on and it gets ingrained in those early employees, they're the ones who are then training new hires that come in later or going out to lunch with them and talking about things. And eventually you can get this sort of self-correcting system because everybody knows what they should be doing. And if someone gets out of line a little bit, someone's willing to speak up or nudge them or talk to them at lunch and say, hey, you actually should have done this a little bit differently, and get them back in line without you as the owner or leader of the company having to jump into every single little problem that comes up.
Yeah. And so one thing you brought up is, you know, as you grow, you hire more people, but also your service changes, right? And when Pronto was first started, it was 100% focused on one industry, essentially offering just kind of one all-in-one type service. But again, as the company grew, it had more demand actually from customers to add new services, and just customer demands just kind of increasing as well. And so I think you have sort of a double challenge. You have increasing complexity in the service that you're delivering because you also have a broader sort of audience. So not just serving IT service providers, but also healthcare providers and law firms and different types of clients, as well as offering new services like Google Ads or SEO campaigns on top of what you're already doing with the website and the newsletter and social media stuff. And then you have new joiners, and everything is changing all at once. So I guess that gets very complicated. And so essentially, you know, how do you kind of, handle that and kind of did that influence how you were structuring the team, you know, moving forward? Did you try to get teams to specialize in one vertical or one product? And how do you kind of kept sort of that cohesiveness that you had when you were all able to be into one room?
Yeah, I think one thing that is an important lesson we've taken away is to not try to do too much all at once. And the times when we have taken on a bunch of stuff and not really had the bandwidth or not having a key person to own that transition or that new thing, that's where it really starts to struggle. If it's just sort of like, hey, we need to go do this thing, but there's no one who's leading the charge and no one who's ultimately responsible for the success of that initiative, then it sort of falls apart and gets really messy. But if you become very focused and say, okay, the important step we're doing here is expanding from working with IT companies only to being able to work with any B2B company out there, that's a really big jump to make. But we said, okay, who's going to be responsible for this? Our production team is the front line because they're going to be building these sites. And we need our writers to understand these different industries. We need our designers to go look at designs for these different industries. You can sort of start to break it apart from there. But it's a team focus, and everyone knows this is the big thing that we're trying to accomplish in the next 3 months or 6 months or year or whatever it might be. There have been times when we, I think, have tried to do too much. And when you're doing several things at once, you're not really focused on anything, and they all kind of fall apart. We've had that happen a couple times in our history, just because you might see a few different opportunities and they happen to pop up at the same time. And you say, oh, well, I could make money off of this thing, and I could go do this thing over here. And if I do this, then it's all going to work out, and I'm going to make a lot more money because we have these three new initiatives. But really, that should have been just one and not three, because you as a leader of a business don't have the bandwidth to really focus on each of those and make sure they're successful. Or sometimes there just aren't enough qualified leaders to take the lead there and charge through whatever needs to be done to build that new business line or launch a new service or tackle a new industry, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I mean, one key thing you mentioned is being able to really own it. And very often with our clients and small businesses, really it's the founder and the owner who's really just trying to kind of own it all. And that can be very difficult very quickly. And I think that's something you kind of brought up when we were prepping for this episode and kind of saying, you know, that there were certain strategic hires that really helped free, you know, Derek and Corey's time and yours as well eventually.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of key hires through our time. We have a lot of great people, but in the early stages, I think there are two that stick out to me. There's one guy, Alex, who was our first project manager. He was hired just before I was, and he really took a lot of workload off of Derek and Corey so that they could actually focus on growing the business or solving bigger problems instead of being stuck in the day-to-day grind of building websites and answering support requests and those sorts of things. I think that made a huge difference because, when you're starting a new business as an owner or a founder, you're really invested in building those relationships with clients and taking care of them. You feel very responsible for the quality of work that they receive. And so it's kind of natural to say, I just have to go do this work because I'm going to do it best and I want the best for my clients. It is very hard to take that step and hand it off to someone else and say, now Alex is your person. You don't get to talk to me anymore. Here's your PM and he's going to take care of you. That can feel scary to the owner who has been responsible the whole time. It can also feel scary to the client who thinks, now I don't have access to the owner anymore. My service quality is going to decrease. The company's going to change. It's not going to be the same great service that I've expected. So I think it's really important that when you get some of these first hires that you take the time to make sure they can be excellent at what they are going to do. It's a really crucial transition to make from a hands-on day-to-day owner to handing off to a PM and the owner doing bigger things. So I think that was one really big hire that we made. The other big one was Andrew, our first really experienced salesperson that we hired. Up till that point, Derek was doing all the sales himself and just calling people up and saying hi and chatting with them and seeing if they wanted a website. And actually, Derek was a great salesman and did a great job at that. But his sales tactics were sort of like mine, where just like, hey, here's what we do. If you want to sign up, great. If you don't want to sign up, all right, that's cool too. Go on your way. And Andrew really came in with a lot of experience and a lot of sales skills that took our ability to bring in more clients to the next level. And again, I think it's one of those things that's hard to let go of because Derek knows, hey, I'm actually decent at sales, business comes in, and am I going to hand this off to someone else? And what if they don't do well and we stop getting as many customers each month? And that's a bad position to be in as well. But thankfully, again, it's just taking the time to find the right person. And thankfully, we found that right person in Andrew, who was just, I think he was on the phone all day, every day, just doing as many calls as he could, talking to anybody he could talk to, and closing as many deals as he could every month. And it worked out really well.
Yeah, and I think what was key is bringing someone up on who's equally hungry to grow the company, right? It's really having the growth mindset. And I think that's something we've seen with a lot of the key protons here that we've worked with, is that they really want to grow both personally and, you know, professionally and the company. They're not happy with just, just looking at things kind of happening the way, you know, slowly or whatever. They really want to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I would agree. I think generally getting the right people on board can really help steer the company in the right direction and really help free up the time of the leaders of the company to take on more complex challenges. But then a lot of people that are potentially listening to this episode are also going to ask themselves, how am I going to get to that first $1 million? And how am I going to get past $1 million? So in your experience, Tim, was adding another $1 million in revenue easier or harder over time? There's often this hope among entrepreneurs to get into this flywheel growth mode, but was it really like that, or was it more of a gradual sort of climb towards that milestone?
I would say it was a little bit of both. There were periods where it was a gradual climb and we were just sort of chipping away at getting more clients every month. And there were times when we sort of unlocked a new level and jumped up very quickly to to a higher revenue level. And I think those big unlocking moments came when we realized, hey, we actually have a decent number of clients already, and they're all just on a basic monthly WordPress care plan, and we could be selling more to them. We have this client base of a 100 or 200 clients. Let's go talk to them about SEO or PPC or blogging. We've had a bunch of different marketing services over the years. And I think that's when we started to see, oh, we can actually just essentially double our revenue by going to our own client base, who's always growing because we're trying to bring in new clients all the time and continuing to upsell them along the way, unlocked this next level where we go, oh, wow, why didn't we think of this before? There's a huge amount of revenue to be made here when we're selling to our clients. So yeah, I think it does get easier. It's never totally easy, at least not in my experience, that there's always challenges that come along with that and lots of challenges that come with growth. But yeah, I would say it's harder at the very beginning to get your initial clients and expand from there and sort of get this regular flow of new clients coming in the door. But once you have that working, it becomes really powerful and much easier because you have this existing relationship with them. They trust you and you can say, hey, I've taken a look at your site or whatever service you provide for them, and here's something you're missing that I could do to provide some extra value to you.
Yeah, I think generally it all starts from delivering really great service from the very beginning and then being able to gain the trust of those clients and then having that opportunity to upsell them. And then really on building on that, as Pronto moved towards the 5 million mark, what do you think were some of the unexpected challenges that surfaced while the company was growing?
Yeah, there were a bunch. I would say figuring out how teams change and function was a big part. There's been multiple times when we've restructured, both in just rearranging people and also in terms of layoffs and just saying, hey, we actually overhired here and we need to cut people out and rethink how these teams work. So sometimes that's a difficult reality to face when you realize I don't have the right people in the right places to do the work that needs to be done now. And it's always difficult when you're dealing with having to change people's jobs or let them go. But it's a reality of that I think every business faces at some point. I think we also experienced a higher level of competition along the way. Or early on, there weren't all that many other agencies providing website support and website builds in the same way that we were, where it's just a flat monthly fee. But over the years, it's become a very popular business model. And now there's hundreds, if not thousands, of agencies that offer similar services, along with lots of just local freelance developers who can build a site for you or design a site for you. So that there's so many different places that people can turn for their website development and management that it's no longer as easy as just getting on a 15-minute phone call and saying, oh yeah, this sounds good, I'm gonna sign up. So yeah, those are a couple challenges that I think we were kind of unprepared for, but have managed to work through in some ways.
And Tim, you mentioned over hiring, and I think hiring just in general is a very difficult exercise. I mean, still today we're hiring every day, and we do find this a difficult exercise. Actually, do you see a difference in the type of profiles that Pronto hired in the beginning and now, and also the fact that we're hiring for different roles or positions we never had, like you mentioned before?
Yeah, I think it is quite a bit different. Early on, we hired a lot of fresh grads who had very limited experience, and we were really looking for, are you motivated? Are you willing to learn new things? Are you a good communicator? A lot of those soft skills that we felt, okay, well, we can train this person on how to be a project manager or how to run a Google Ads campaign. And as long as they have those soft skills, will help them get to where they need to be in terms of the technical skills for that role. There were still other roles like developers or designers where they must have had a previous experience. You can't hire a fresh grad with no design experience and expect them to design a great website. But I would say today we're much more focused on the experience and existing technical skills that they have and finding someone who has that right balance of the pre-existing experience of doing that role in another job and also has those soft skills. I think we've leveled up what we're looking for as our clients' needs have leveled up as well. We need a higher caliber team member today who's not coming in as a blank slate that we have to train and teach them everything, but comes in with existing experience that we can build on and have them continue to grow and face new challenges with Pronto.
And a slightly different question now, and sort of looking more sort of pivotal moments and sort of Pronto's growth trajectory. Any particular one that come to mind?
I mean, even recently, this kind of stuff still happens. I would say COVID was a defining moment for us and a lot of businesses around the world, where we had to very quickly rethink, is there any money coming in next month, and what's the future going to look like, and all the uncertainty everybody faced at the time. And I feel like that was a very defining moment from, I guess I'll say, I think we are a very different company today than we were even just 4 years ago. And even though it doesn't, 4 years sounds like a decent amount of time, it doesn't feel like a long time. Those 4 years went by pretty quickly. But we went through a lot. We had to lay off a bunch of people. And although it wasn't fun, I think it was the right thing to do for Pronto, that we had become a little bloated and it felt like we didn't have total control over everything going on in the company, and sort of felt like, well, what's this team working on? Is everybody using their time effectively? Are we really running an efficient, tight ship here? And when those concerns start to creep in, I think that's a sign that, hey, something needs to change here. Something needs to be restructured. And again, it was painful to let those people go, but it allowed us to move teams around and restructure people, get more people in their right seats so we could be better suited for the growth that has come after COVID has passed, and being ready to launch new initiatives like our white label services, which I think would have been harder. It seems a little counterintuitive because we had more people in the past, but I think it would have been harder to launch something like white label services when we had more people but less control over who was doing what and where and all that kind of stuff. And cutting down to what we felt was like the right team members in the right seats makes it much easier to launch a big initiative like white label and have it be successful.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I guess I'm pretty sure with all this big changes happening externally to the company and internally as well, the approach to customer engagement has also evolved over time. How would you say Pronto's approach to customer engagement changed during this growth phase? And sort of with the market evolving, competitors increasing, and customer expectations also rising, like you said, more competition, client customers have more choices. What shifts did you observe in terms of customer engagement?
Yeah, I think customers' expectations have grown a lot. It's like you said, a lot of additional competition out there. I think customers in the digital marketing and in web space are much more informed today than they were even a few years ago. And that means you have to step your game up as well. I think one thing that we're still in the process of and haven't fully completed is working towards more and more phone and Zoom and sort of face-to-face, if you will, not exactly face-to-face, but across the globe, face-to-face on computer screens, communication with our clients. In the past, we were very apprehensive to jump on the phone calls with clients. Being overseas sometimes made it hard with time zone differences, and we've gone through different iterations of having particular roles that are only for, they would only talk to clients, but they wouldn't do the actual work. And that got kind of messy. And we're finally at a point where we realize, oh, we really need to invest in building relationships with our clients, because that's what keeps them tied to us. And if we don't have those relationships, then any competitor can kind of swoop in and say, oh, well, yeah, I could do this better for you. Come sign up with me. I'm just down the road. And that's sometimes an enticing offer for a local business owner to hear. So we need to do a much better job of building those relationships so they feel at least some emotional connection to us and feel like there's a person within Pronto who's on their side, making sure they're getting the most out of our services, and that they're being really well taken care of. We're still in the process of figuring out exactly what that means, but we have gotten a lot better at it over the years and no longer as afraid of getting on calls as we used to be. And now a lot of our team members will just jump on the phone when needed and talk through something, or send a Loom recorded video to a client explaining something rather than trying to write out a complicated thing in an email. We're so easy to get off track in written communication or take things the wrong way, get confused. So I think that's, we've started to step our game up there and still have a little bit of a ways to go, but we'll get there soon, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting how I also believe back in 2010 or so, when I first started getting into digital marketing, I was getting coming across videos or articles where they would say you can start a business online without ever having to talk to a customer. But in 10, 15 years, things have changed dramatically, where talking to customers is paramount. I would say it's necessary. You can really get away without speaking to customers, at least over a Zoom call or a Loom video, that type of stuff. And I'm sure, I mean, adapting to higher customer expectations and in a more competitive environment is obviously critical for growth. Pierre, did you have a question for Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of, you know, that was the original model of just kind of working over a help desk, and that was something our core industry MSPs was very used to. And so as we grew into other industries, you know, they were used to working differently. So, you know, we had to adapt to that. Yeah, in terms of the market changing, you know, I think, you know, one of the other things, sorry, that you mentioned was sort of, you know, building more of those relationships, kind of adopting some of those newer technologies that now allow us to have recorded videos or live Zoom calls or kind of communicating in a new way. But it's also, you know, the service itself is changing. There are more channels, and we kind of went from being sort of a sort of all-in-one full service to being more focused on perhaps fewer kind of types of web marketing technologies, but that allows us to both be sort of better at those services, but at the same time go deeper and build a better experience and relationship. So, you know, we're doing more in terms of number of services that we're doing, but we're doing more in terms of building that deep relationship. And, you know, you were talking about local competitors, but one, I think, of the things that's very interesting is, you know, I think often we'll hear clients wanting to have just one agency. And there are agencies out there that will try to do everything. And I think our lesson is we can't do everything. It's just too hard. And, you know, one of the things you've also mentioned was, you know, partnering is key. And that's also why I think as well, when it comes to marketing and building and growing your business through marketing activities and channels, you may actually need more than one agency or different types of specialists. And so I think what we're seeing is the market is so big, there's so many opportunities, so many things to do, that actually there's even opportunities for Pronto to partner with some of those local companies. And I think this is just something that is good to share with our audience in general, that there are just so many things to do that, you know, it's important as well to look at those partnerships and whether they may seem obvious or not.
Yeah, I think you also touched on something there, that we've narrowed down our focus to things that we feel we can be excellent at. And I think that was one of the takeaways from our restructuring during COVID and sort of the crisis and the wake-up call that happened at that point, we not only reconsidered, do we have the right people in the right seats? We also said, do we have the right services to help our clients be successful? And can we actually be great at delivering those services? We realized that we had a bunch of services that we had spun up just because we saw an opportunity to make money and not because we thought this is something we really want to be great at. And I think we had chased after that revenue for the sake of new revenue without taking a step back and thinking, is this the right path where we are going to go be excellent at this particular thing? And so restructuring not only our people, but our services during that time really helped us get refocused on the things we are good at and providing value through those fewer services to our clients.
Would you say, Tim, that sort of having this sort of shiny object syndrome was maybe one of the biggest sort of mistakes or missteps that Pronto experienced over time, or were there other things that you that come to mind in terms of?
I don't know if I would go as far as calling it a mistake, because some of them we did make a decent amount of money on, and that was fun and good. But I think if we could go back and redo it again, I think we would do it differently. There were a bunch of services where it started because one client said, hey, can you do an ebook for me? And we just went, okay, well, how do we turn this into a recurring service so that we can sell it to more people and get a whole bunch of ebooks out there all at once? And I think we didn't take a moment to think like, is this actually something that is going to deliver a lot of value to our clients that they're going to want to stay enrolled in for a long time, for years into the future? So it was nice for some short-term gains and in some ways probably strengthened our connection with some clients. But I think, yeah, if we could go back and do that again, we would focus on the bigger, more impactful services, the things that are going to really move the needle for a client and not necessarily the things that look nice and make the client, maybe they feel good saying, oh, I got an ebook. I feel like I did something, but they're not doing the marketing that's going to drive leads to that ebook. So what does it really even matter that we did that? I think that's the lesson we learned, that when you can do something impactful and meaningful for a client that's going to actually move the needle for them, that's where clients become ecstatic with your service and love working with you. Not when you give them nice, fluffy stuff that makes them feel good for a short-term period.
Understanding the right areas for growth and staying true to your core competencies is probably the most important thing. We touched on this a few times before, just trying to do what you are really good at and not try to spread yourself too thin. But how would you approach, or how does Pronto approach today new growth opportunities?
Yeah, like I said, one of our biggest takeaways has been not doing too much all at once. And so we usually only have one or two areas where we're really focused on doing something new and innovating our service offering in some way. It's actually interesting, like this year, all of our team goals are less about doing something new and more about just getting better at the things we already do. And so most of the company is just focused on still those core service offerings and being better at that. And we have just actually really two areas where we're investing in trying to grow. One is our white label services and the other is our consulting division, Growth Connect. And the way that we approach that is we see an opportunity and put a little bit of money behind it and say, oh, let's see what happens here. Let's go talk to some clients, do some research. Maybe we have to hire someone to kind of get this rolling. Let's put a little bit of money behind it. But from there, whatever that new thing is, needs to prove that it's a self-sustaining, growing opportunity and that we don't keep dumping more and more money into it, hoping that growth is going to come at some point. We sort of need to spin up a minimum viable product and see, is there interest from our existing client base or new clients to sign up for that? And is it actually possible for us to run it profitably at a small level? And if it is, then we go, okay, it's clear that it's working. There's business, just new business coming in the door, throwing money at us. Let's throw more money into this thing that we're innovating and grow a team, put some marketing resources behind it, and really see how big it can go from there. But we've always been a little cautious in that way, where we don't say, okay, here's $100,000 to go build a new service and figure this out. It's always, oh, let's take it one small step at first and see how it goes. And if it works out well, then we're going to throw more and more money into it to make sure it it can be very successful for us.
And earlier you mentioned that recurring revenue is sort of a key part of how Pronto has grown and built sort of a profitable business. Would you say that's still one of the main criteria that you look at when you're looking at new growth opportunities? And what are other criteria you would be looking at today?
Yeah, I think it's still the core of our business is recurring revenue. Something like, 80 to 90% of our revenue is recurring, either monthly or yearly. So it's been at the core of what Pronto does from the very beginning. I think it's such a crucial part of having a successful business, actually a successful business that's less stressful to run, because when you're doing one-time projects, every month you're worried about where that next project is going to come from and is there enough work for the team to do. But when you have this recurring revenue, we have our clients' credit cards on file and they get billed automatically every month. That comes into our bank. There's so much less stress there because we know we have that recurring revenue that we can depend on. And it still is a really key part of how we approach our new offerings today and our innovation today. I would say the thing that's different from our latest offerings, particularly with white label and the marketing strategy that we do, is that we're more focused on also making sure that the service we're launching is pushing us up market in some way, pushing us towards larger deals. Whereas in the past, we did a lot of very small deals for $100 a month, $200 a month, which does add up when you can have a lot of volume behind it. But we've found that when we're working with bigger clients or bigger partnerships, that's where we can find a lot of success for them and sort of mesh a lot more easily with what they're trying to accomplish and what we can provide for them.
Yeah, and from a growth engine perspective, so if we kind of go back to your ebook kind of example, it's sort of a very affordable low monthly fee at $99 per month, but then that means you've got to sell it a lot. And then because it's a low monthly fee, there's sort of, you need to keep that sort of fairly sort of templatized in order to make it work. And so there's that risk of you need to sell it a lot, but then you saturate the market somewhat quickly as well. And so that's where I think perhaps we kind of hit certain kind of growth challenges around that. Whereas, when you're going up market, then you're sort of finding a bit of an equilibrium between sort of a higher service quality, higher average revenue per client, and sort of a growth engine that doesn't necessarily need to bring a super high volume at all time, number of leads and new clients.
Yeah. There were times where we had a goal of selling 30 new websites in a month. We needed 30 new clients to come on board to continue that growth because we were selling that service for $250. And to meet our financial targets, it required 30 clients a month. And that's a lot of leads that you need. It's a lot of sales conversations to have. It's hard to scale to that level and do it sustainably. I think it's much more sustainable, even though it's more work to close a $3,000 a month deal than a $250 a month deal. It's not as much work as trying to do 30 deals in a month. So it really does work out to push yourself up market. I think you'll also find that the clients at that level have a better grasp of what they are trying to accomplish. It becomes a lot easier to work with them and get on the same page about setting right expectations and helping them achieve their goals.
And sometimes even selling a $99 per month, technical service is still, complicated and will still take a long time.
Yeah. Sometimes multiple phone calls to close a $99 per month deal. And it can be as much work to close a $100 a month deal as a $3,000 a month deal.
Yeah. Tim, shifting focus a little bit back to sort of one of the earlier topics we talked about, culture, but leadership in particular here. I guess a company to get to a 5 million annual revenue has to have some sort of leadership structure. And I imagine that the way leadership was implemented or structured at the very early stages of the company and the way it is today is quite different. How would you say the leadership structure at Pronto has influenced where the company stands today?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, well, as an owner or a leader of an agency, you really set the tone early on for what the culture or type of leadership will be within that company. And Derek, as our everybody's first manager at Pronto, really had a people first focus that has stuck with the company through today. I manage and lead much in the same way that Derek did, because he was the manager in my sort of lifetime career that I've worked with the most and had the most influence on me over what it means to be a good manager and a good leader for a company. And I think that people first focus has worked out very well for us. And there are times when it's been clear to our team members where we've chosen people over profit in some cases. I think that earns a lot of trust and loyalty with the team members that are working for you, that you don't just talk a game about caring about people. You show them that you care about your team members and that you want them to have a good life outside of Pronto as well, that it's not just all about grinding for 12 hours every day and just making as much profit as we can. I think what has made Pronto a sustainable place to work and a place where we have now a bunch of people hitting their 10-year anniversaries is because we've shown that we really care about the people that work for us and trust them, and they trust the leadership of Pronto to do the right thing for them. And I think when you have that trust with your team, they're more likely to stay longer. They are more likely to step up and work harder when it's necessary. We don't make our team members work crazy hours, but sometimes there's an emergency in the middle of the night and somebody has to wake up and take care of it, or someone has to be working the night shift to take care of it. I think people are more likely to go along with that when you've earned that trust by really showing them that you value them as a person, not just as an employee who's there to make money for you.
And do you feel like there were any particular things that, you know, Pronto did in order to kind of build that culture? When did that culture sort of become perhaps more formal? Or
Some of it came through the values, but I think some of it just came from Derek talking about things early on. Like, one thing that has stuck with me, and I imagine if you have talk to some of our other early employees, they remember it, where Derek would get up in front of the whole company at one of our company meetings. And one time he had this long string and he had two people on each end of the room holding it. And he sort of walked halfway through it and cut it in the middle and said, "Half your life is lost sleeping. So that's already gone." And then he calculated the amount of time that you spend working, and most of that rest of the time is gone. You have this little bit left for family and friends and travel and the things you do outside of work that you really enjoy. And he made this point that if you have a job that you hate, then the majority of your life is not going to be fun and fulfilling. And that's really important to find that in the work that you do, so that you can enjoy your work and you can enjoy everything outside of work as well. I think those concepts of finding work-life balance and making sure people are thinking about what's fulfilling in their work have been within Pronto from the very beginning, because it's also part of why Derek founded Pronto, that he wanted a place that was more fulfilling to him, where he could enjoy his work every day and go home and enjoy his life at home as well, and not feel like he was stuck in this big political corporate world that he had been a part of. I think, again, setting that tone very early does actually make a huge difference down the road. And I have some of those same qualities in how I lead the company today, because I mean, I just listened to Derek talk about them month after month, and it got ingrained in me, and it seems like the right way to lead, and it matches the company values, it matches my personal values. So I think that people-centric approach that Derek ingrained very early on has helped us become the company that we are today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I definitely remember, Derek always, really personally caring whether you were enjoying your time at Pronto and you know, asking about it in a very genuine way. I think his goal was always to make Pronto the best office in Bangkok. So,
right.
I think that's something he repeated many times. And I think that's was a big part of what attracted people to Pronto and why people stayed on. And then as well, creating a lot of friendships at the company as well.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. And I think just kind of going sort of maybe one final question, since we were talking about leadership and, are there any particular books that you're reading and that you would like to recommend to the people listening in?
Yeah, I'm always trying to read a new business book, but there's three that I always recommend to our managers when they come asking what they should read or what they should do to learn new things. One is Radical Candor, a great management book that gives you all the foundations of what it means to be a great manager and leader, and balancing the accountability and directness part of being a manager with the personal caring that I think is very important as well to building that trust and building relationships with team members. I think another great one is Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, because you're going to have team problems. It's a guaranteed fact. There's no way you're going to run your business and not run into a team that has some sort of issue. And this book does a great job of, in a really approachable way, explaining the different ways teams run into issues and how to overcome those issues. And the last one for me personally that made a big difference was Traction by Gino Wickman. That was the first business book I read that, some business books are kind of just like, oh, be a great leader and do the right thing and sort of this like fluffy woo-woo, like, oh, just do all the great stuff and it's fun and awesome. Traction was the first book I read that felt really practical to me, that had real initiatives that I could implement within Pronto to make meetings better, to get people aligned better, to set goals in the right way. But I think everything around Traction and the EOS system that has come out of that book is really fantastic and made me realize all the structures that were needed in a business to get it run efficiently and effectively.
Thanks for those recommendations, Tim. I'm sure our listeners will find them as valuable as you have. I know I did. Great books. And with that, we'd like to thank you, Tim, for joining us today. Your experience and insights have been incredibly valuable, and I'm sure our listeners have gained a lot from it as well. And to our listeners, make sure to tune in to the next episode of the 5 Million Milestone Podcast, where we'll explore more strategies and stories from successful business leaders. You won't want to miss it. Until then, keep pushing boundaries and striving for growth. This is Matteo and Pierre signing off. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.